Welcome to the FinTech Scaling Show. This podcast is sponsored by the Growth Platform Framework. B2B FinTech startups accelerate customer acquisition and set up business operations to scale systematically. When you're ready to grow, reach out to us at richard@ipractitioners.com. Now, over to the show with Richard Dosey, founder and host. Hey, what's up, everyone? Today on the show, we have Andra, FinTech and FS guru. Hey, Andra, how's it going today?
Hi, Richard. I'm fine. Thank you very much for having me.
Great to have you on the show. Maybe let's start the show by you giving us a bit of background about yourself.
I work most of my life in technology consulting, mainly in Europe. I started in Romania as an SAP consultant many, many years ago, in 95, to be more precise.
I was still in South Africa then. That was when Nelson Mandela was coming out of prison back in the day.
yeah, a different time.
Yeah.
And then I worked in Italy, in Milan, in Frankfurt for KPMG for a few years. And then I moved to London. I did an MBA at London Business School. Probably my intention was to figure out what else I can do apart from being an SAP consultant. Being in London led to me working in banking. I realized that everything here was just banking. Doesn't matter what you want to do. You will end somewhere in a bank. As a technologist, I ended up in doing financial technology for banks, which, trust me, in 2000, it was not cool at all. Nobody would say, oh my God, you work in financial technology. How cool is that? No. For me, it was interesting. This is what I like to do. And I worked then for Deutsche Bank, for IBM for many years. So through this type of work, basically, I've seen most large banks. For many years, I worked in what is called the back office of the banks. I would know by heart the back office of many banks and those types of systems. And then in IBM, I was given the chance to set up what we called at the time a business innovation lab, which was a place to experiment with banks. This was, I think, in 2009. And it was very novel. Novel because banks were not used to experiment. It was one of the most enjoyable times of my career at the time, trying to do fast things, but the real one. And then I moved to Lloyds. And I was a lead architect for the Innovation Lab of Lloyd. So again, trying new things, experimenting, doing proof of concepts, working with startups, lots of startups, hunting for startups. After seeing so much, I thought, okay, I have some ideas. I worked on these ideas within a fellowship, which was offered to me by Antimus, which is a venture capital fund focused on financial services. A group of people with a vision, a group of people that I admire a lot. And then I decided to work by myself on these ideas during my PhD. I do research at the Warwick University. The PhD is in computational urban science, but trust me, I work on financial services. And yes, I am also the head of solution architecture of FinTech OS, which is a startup which started 3 years ago in Romania, and I have joined this year in a period of high growth. Yeah, that's it. All my CV.
Yeah, wow. Impressive background. And I mean, maybe we can look at the FinTech side of things and startup world. I mean, in what capacity have you worked and helped and advised them over the years?
When I was in IBM, it depended on my role and where I was embedded. So when I worked for IBM, which was a large technology company, the point was to build proof of concept where you bring platforms that the customer has. Really, we could install them in the research center of IBM when, you know, AWS and Azure were not a thing, and put IBM products that we wanted to demonstrate, but also bring that edge with the novel ideas from startups. So I was watching all sorts of demos and conferences all over the world and getting ideas and then looking for startups. And that type of work was from us, from a large technology company towards a startup, where I would assess if that fit with what we want to do, with the idea, if it brings something new. In Lloyds, it was a bit different. It was experimentation, very fast experimentation. And we were also very much involved with Startup Bootcamp, where I was a mentor. There, the relationship was a bit deeper, I would say, in the sense that you worked with startups which were in very early stage of development. And my help was usually of positioning, because many startups in fintech made huge assumptions about how the industry works or how technology works and so on. So just advising them and just working with them of refining that positioning. Okay, you have something good here. You have a piece of functionality which we need, but actually it's not where you think it is, you know. You have to figure out where it fits in the architecture of the bank and who are the stakeholders and who would care about what you bring here in a bank, because this is where you want to sell. With some, I worked more on the integration, because I think one of the most common things I've heard, it was, you know, a startup coming to us and say, oh, and we will integrate with you in 2 weeks, or, and we will deliver this project in 2 months. And this is when I knew it was like, man, you have no idea what you're talking about. Of course, they didn't know of each other, you know, and they thought that they are the only ones coming and telling me these things, you know, we integrate so fast and we do this so fast. But they didn't know that, you know, we have 80 feeds for an app. They didn't know about the huge pre-processing behind very simple functionalities and so on. So I worked with them on understanding, okay, this is a structure. This is what you have behind. Do not come with this fairy tale messages, because the listener switches off instantly from you. So it was a work on integration and positioning. And yeah, now I'm in a startup. I eat a humble pie. It's very difficult work to affect change, basically. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, just pick up on one aspect there. I mean, you mentioned integration of tech products or new products into, in this instance, a bank, but it could be, you know, anywhere in sort of the financial services space. I think it's really important to, yeah, you mentioned realistic, but yeah, that's obviously very important, but be truthful with yourself. I know you mentioned you're working with startups and you're obviously educating them, but it's so important that, you know, startups, scale-ups are truthful with themselves as to how they will deliver a bit of tech into a, if it's a bank or if it's another entity, because, you know, ultimately that's going to build trust with the customer. And if you have that at the start, you're going to be there for a long time, right?
Yeah. But just to make sure, none of these people, in my view, were lying. It was not that, you know, they exaggerated with the intention to sell. They truly believed that this could be done. And this came from the fact that they thought, you know, banking, it looked probably complicated to others, but it's simple. What do you have there? You have transactions and you have customer data and you have a process. What could be so complicated? You know, so basically the thinking in abstract as a model or the logical model, if you want, yeah, it's not very complicated, but the reality of delivering this process in a bank, it's very complicated. And this is what delays and make difficult any sort of integration with a startup. So, yeah, it's good to qualify this,
In junior time, either, you know, working with IBM or sort of boot camp, or even now, I mean, what do you consider the important parts to scaling a team and taking it to the next level?
It's difficult. I think you have to understand pretty well the model of your business first, of your startup. You cannot grow usually because of lack of resources as you want, you know, on all fronts. Oh, let's hire here 10 engineers and let's hire here, I don't know what. Some startups have this luxury at some point, but at the beginning, you have to pick and choose, you know, it's Sophie's choice. okay, not so dramatic. And understanding what is critical and in what logical steps you could grow, it's essential. But moving from that level of the beginning, let's say you are at the stage where you hire what you need, people that you need, of course, everybody wants, oh, I want to hire the best people. And let's assume that you can hire the best people. Those best people usually come from very different environments, have very different ways of working, and they are used to be the best. You know, it's like in a secondary school, you start year 7 in a grammar school here in London, and every single kid was the best in their school, you know, and it doesn't instantly form a group just because they were the best. They want to continue to be the best of that group. And this happens very often in startups too. And it wastes time, in my view. Finding that common way of working in a new group where everybody comes from a different background, it's very difficult. In an ideal situation, they are very motivated by what they built. To me, this was, I think, the best glue of a team and motivation to work together. They all like and believe in what they built. But this is a rare occurrence, I would say. Probably I have more things to add, but let's not ramble on.
You're touching a few things there. I quite like what you're saying. I mean, it's nice to go out. It's nice to think that, listen, I'm going to go out, I'm going to hire a best in class. But, you know, you touched on the magic sauce, as maybe I call it, is how do you integrate that? How do you create that senior management team where they all share a common vision, a common purpose? Maybe break it down even further. They all have accountability. They all have that level of trust. And maybe it's more about working as a management team, coaching a senior management team such that the culture is started at the top and that's pushed down throughout the company such that, you know, culture, philosophies, values, et cetera, are embedded into the ways of working in a company. I mean, quite high level, I know, but what are your thoughts on that?
Hesitated because probably I have a lot to say about this, or I think a lot about this. Not that what I have to say, it's original in any way, but it's relevant to me and it's important to me. The working environment that you manage to establish in a company, especially at the beginning, has such a big impact on how people work. It's like, you know, the earth for certain plants. Or I'll give you an example that was very dear to me. It was probably one of the main lessons I learned at London Business School. It was not about finance. And one of our strategy professors, originally from India, said, you know, normally during this, he was teaching at INSEAD in Fontainebleau, which is a beautiful forest, very nice. And he said, during the year, every day I run 5-10 kilometers before teaching. At the beginning of the day, I don't have a problem. During the holidays, I go with my kids to India to visit my parents. And as we go there, we are all wrapped in wet bed sheets because we cannot breathe. We are so unused with the temperature and with the humidity and so on. And he said, I am the same person, but the environment is different. Make sure that in your working environment, you make people feel like at Fontainebleau, not like in Bangalore in the summer, you know. And I've been through both types of environments at work. I mean, you know, I've been in environments where it feels like Fontainebleau, and I worked in environments where it feels like Bangalore. Needless to say, what you get from the same people in these two environments is very different. So how in a working environment you can build Fontainebleau and, you know, take inspiration from the natural world. It has to feel normal. You don't have to contort yourself to feel like you are on a stage somewhere. It has to be transparent. I think that the transparency of communication, it's something that you cannot fake, you know. And when people at all level in a small organization which is growing perceive this transparent. Yeah, we have troubles. Oh, okay, these are the troubles. Let's see how we deal with them. Or this is, to me, very empowering because it tells people, we trust you. We trust you in being with us, knowing that we have this situation. We trust you to come with a solution. We trust you to be part of the team, and so on and so on. So the transparency in communication, clarity, helps a lot. It's essential, actually.
Yeah, some really, really valuable insights there. I mean, I'll take you back a few years. I mean, one of my old clients had, you know, a small startup. They were going through growth, as we were just discussing, and obviously wanted to go out and hire the best in class. But we took a different approach to it. We said, well, the first thing we got to do is sort out our culture. That's the most important thing, because it's going to give us the rhythm. When someone comes in, they have to fit into our culture, our rhythm, and the way our team works. And that's the way we approach it. I think it's good to think of that upfront, rather than sometimes, for whatever reason, I'm not saying it's right or wrong, sometimes it's later down the line where you need to do it, i.e. it's a critical point or a tipping point in the startup life cycle. So, you know, culture is so important. I think you just alluded to that. Culture embodies trust, embodies rhythm, embodies how you want to work as a team, and obviously the people that you want to attract.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And who want to stay.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, you did mention communication as another, you know, part of building teams, building awareness, building transparency. I mean, what have you seen, or what do you do to make certain that your teams and the people you work with have an understanding of what's going on a continuous basis? Maybe I'll give you an example. So again, going back a few years, I always have to bring these little stories out. As you know, in growth companies, it moves very, very fast. And, you know, I was chatting to a CEO, and I said to her, we need to communicate. We need to communicate all the time, and not just about problems, but about what's going on. What's our big vision? What's our weekly top three things we need to focus on as a team? So, you know, I'll give credit to the CEO. She said, well, you know, what about doing simple videos? You know, I'll record a video, like a 2-minute video, and I'll send it out into the senior management team, and they can, you know, cascade it down into other parts of the organization. And, you know, that worked wonders in just getting everyone aligned to a purpose, well, a vision, a purpose, and also what really matters this week and this month. I don't know if you have maybe similar stories or similar methods that you use.
It happens that as an architect, usually, as I work, I do not have large teams reporting to me, or very solitary kind of role of advisor to all people over the years. I mean, I do prefer one-to-one interaction. So in the sense that keeping the pulse of what is going on through with one-to-one interaction with certain people, and having very frank discussions from time to time with key members. I think I'm very much a social media type of person in a ridiculous way. But what I think, what I read, I usually broadcast. You know, because I find it non-intrusive in a world where the fight for attention is continuous. You know, people have to work on this, on this, on this. I do not want to stick in anybody's schedule another Zoom meeting where we should, I don't know, socialize or impart, I don't know what vision, because I don't think people can do this in this world of the lockdown where they are hooked to the screens 8 to 10 hours per day. So that's not the way. So it has to be information which is available to them, which they can go to when they feel, when they can, you know, but the information is consistent. The information is there. They know where you put it. They know where to find you. That's more my style. I'm trying to be mindful of the context and of the time we live in. And I don't have, you know, I do it in this way. I do videos and I don't have it. So probably I just post on internal channels. I have my own kind of channel, which is called Learning. And this is where I put comments on webinars or courses that I attend, or I ask people if they want to read a certain paper together with me and comment on it and discuss with it, because I think this is how you create that culture, a culture of interest. Yeah. What is the world around us? Where is our place? I think it's better than some slides, in my view.
No, I totally agree. I mean, I love your philosophy around sharing, engaging. And if people want to come to that webinar or read that book, then, you know, you guys can have a chat about it afterwards and see what each other's thoughts are.
Yeah, yeah.
And I mean, you did mention that you do have one-on-ones with your team members, and it sounds like in some instances that you need to knuckle down and make certain that problems are solved. And I mean, in that vein of thinking, I think part of successful teams is having that DNA whereby there is healthy conflict, if I could call it that. And yeah, it would be good to get your insights on that.
Yeah, I'm probably a bit obsessive about problem solving. And if anything, probably I need to learn to let it go. I think I'm in the business of problem solving, if anything. And now that you ask me, I think I have a view which probably don't impart a lot of what it means that the problem is solved. And I think my threshold of problem being solved is very often a bit further than when many consider that the problem is solved. What I mean by this is that I have in mind always who uses what we do. Do I want to be that person who has to search for things in a stupid manner every day as part of my job? Do I want to be that user who has to go through various loops to just get into the platform? So for me, a problem solved doesn't mean that somehow you can get on the platform. For me, a problem solved means that you have a good process, a smooth process, and if possible, the best there is in terms of realization with the technology you have. How to do this? Yeah, you do run in conflict with people. Yes, sometimes you're being ignored, like being too picky, what do you want? We have it. Nobody asks for more than that, something like that. What you can do? She persisted. That's my... That's my logo. She persisted. Yeah.
I think it's good to have healthy conflict. I mean, that's where it'd be interesting to get your view. That's where problems are really solved, because there's views put on the table and there's questions asked, hard questions, hopefully. And off the back of that, there's generally a consensus of how to move forward, not just as an individual, but as a team. So, the conflict is, from a scaling perspective anyway, it should be part of a scaling team's DNA. Obviously, it has to be healthy. You can't be rude and obnoxious during these types of meetings or sessions. And as you're working with fintechs and leaders throughout your career, I mean, what do you think these leaders should be asking themselves, and what factors should they be considering as they go forward and grow and scale their teams?
So I don't believe in scaling or growing for the sake of it. And this is a mindset on the market, which I find quite common nowadays, where startups say, oh, we grow fast and we occupy the market, and this is how you build an entry barrier. And this type of mindset come from the leaders, from the founders. I think it's in a way an old mindset, old meaning 20 years old mindset. Mm. And you've seen it probably in 2000, 2001, after the internet boom bust and so on. The philosophy of the founders, why are we growing and what type of business we are growing, it's important.
Yeah.
And the forced growing, of an idea is not my cup of tea. And I have no advice to give to those people, because I don't think they need my advice in any way, shape or form. However, it's natural to want your business to grow. It's normal to want your business to grow. And I think we live very interesting times, as hard as they are in the lockdown. But they are very interesting because obviously our ways of lives will change. And there is place for new models to appear, which will need to grow. What advice? I don't feel so knowledgeable to give advice to people from a point of view, because I didn't myself grow a business of my own. I have been the advisor, is true, and in close proximity, they are called C-level executives, growing or leading very large companies. And if I am to look at what I observed, so what I think it works is when these people, they don't lie to themselves, that doesn't matter what face they present outside, they are very honest with themselves to the point of being too critical, but they know where they stand. They continuously scan the environment. They surround themselves with people they trust and who are expert in their domain, let's say, and they defer to them even when their opinion might be different. So what the point of having somebody who advises you on finance if you override them at every opportunity? They are growing the people around them, trust them, and move with them somehow like a pack. They have a vision about their business, which is more than a PowerPoint. And it's a vision that they usually evolve. It's not static. It has permeable borders somehow. It's sensitive to the reality.
Very insightful. I mean, I'll pick up one thing that I think you mentioned is as you scale, it's good to maybe be patient, be considerate, and also use your team around you to help you get to the next level. As all leaders, we always look at learning. You've mentioned that already. But what book or maybe what podcast or what news feed are you currently looking at or currently reading out right now that you think would maybe be useful for the wider community?
I do read a lot and I attend many webinars and schools because it's part of my work as a researcher. But my research is informed from my experience in banking. So because we are in this podcast called Scale, I would highly recommend the book of Geoffrey West from Santa Fe Institute. And the book is called Scale. It's a book which appeared probably 3 years ago, but it's the result of many years of work. And it talks about the laws of scaling as applied to organisms, cities, economies, and companies. And I think there is a way of seeing in this book, which is very relevant for the world we live in. In terms of podcasts, I love 99% Invisible for its sounds and for the gift of storytelling. I love On Being of Krista Tippett. She always brings very soulful guests. Sam Harris podcast, and I try many now and then. I like interviews like the one we do right now. I like stories, real stories. And really, the universities all over the world have now webinars which are accessible to everybody, as a difference from before when you had to be there. So you can listen to the most advanced research there is in any field you might be interested in. So I would encourage people who work in business or in startups to overcome this idea that academia is another world and we are doing something else. Academic research is fascinating, and the ideas that come from there very often have applications in our world. So cross that border and listen to the most advanced research, I would say. Yeah.
Great takeaways there. And as we wrap up the show, how can people find and connect with you?
So I'm on Twitter a lot. So Andra Sonea on Twitter. I'm on LinkedIn, so they can connect with me. Yeah, I'm very happy to meet people and to connect with people from all over the world.
Cool. Brilliant. I mean, thanks for being on the show today. It's been so really insightful listening to you and really looking forward to seeing the output of your research. Actually, it's going to be fascinating to see what comes out of that.
I hope so. Thank you very much.